Well, we've got a great guest today, someone I don't believe we've ever had on the program now. You have heard him speak here in Kansas City.
I have. I met Ken a couple of weeks ago at First Family Church here in the Kansas City metropolitan area. Ken gave a couple of talks that I listened to, and we're going to enjoy this program. We're going to be talking today about something that is lacking, I believe, in the religious community, and that's leadership, sometimes lacking, the leadership of pastors in the community affairs and cultural matters. Ken has a Bachelor of Science degrees from Stanford University and an MBA also from Stanford. He is the founder and chief executive officer of Living Stones Foundation, has been involved in the founding of several very successful businesses around the world, as a matter of fact. Living Stones Foundation, as Ken will probably tell you, is involved in helping all kinds of religious activities, sponsoring them and helping them financially. So we're going to talk today specifically about the role of the church in the culture in which we live, which is obviously deteriorating right around us. Ken, thanks. I know you're a busy fellow. Thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here this morning.
You know, there's I guess, a growing debate, and has been going on for a long time, I guess, maybe since the beginning of Christianity, about the role of pastors and church leaders in cultural, political, community affairs. What's going on here? Where do you believe a pastor and a community, maybe a church leader of another kind, where should they be in all these matters? Should they just be silent, or what's their relationship and their responsibility in these culture wars that are going on?
That's a great question. And typically, if we start where we are now, it's very difficult to understand. But let me go back to the time before the revolution in American history, where we come to the founding fathers. And during those 200 years before the revolution, pastors were deeply involved in the town square. If you go to the East Coast and you go to any one of the greens, which was the public square, on every corner there was a church. And this was the center of not only religious life, but all life. Pastors spoke on every subject. They talked about politics. They talked about the coming of railroads. They talked about the issues of economic life and so forth. They were involved in every area of life, and they were significant in impacting the thoughts of the nation and the founding fathers, who, when they eventually wrote the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, and so forth, they did it with the scriptures in mind. And every major concept in the Declaration and in the Constitution came from a scriptural background. So they had prepared the people. I personally have a great deal of respect for pastors, and particularly for the role that God has called them to. But I think we've gotten away from where God originally called them, and that is to be the moral voice in our culture today. And it doesn't mean just in the church building, but to the community itself.
Ken, you know, just a moment ago, it struck me when you were talking about what took place many, many years back, where you had churches on every corner of the green, and that was the focal point of the community. I had this beautiful picture in mind, but what it seems has happened, and agree or disagree here, it seems that burden of the pastors and those who are in leadership in the churches talking about the important issues of the day, much of that has shifted straight to Washington, D.C., and now we're looking, you know, for instance, at the television screen, listening to people who, in many cases, don't seem to have a lot of moral authority, talking about things that should be brought back down to the local level and talked about by our leaders of our churches. Would you agree or disagree?
Oh, absolutely. There has been this sense of centralization, and we see it even more today, where the states used to have a great deal of rights. Those rights are becoming less and less, and the federal government is becoming greater and greater. And all of this is still dealing with the local church and local populations. We would not be going through this if the local population said to their representatives, we're not going to put up with this. And that's what gets us back into the local environment. It really is up to the people. I spent a day talking with a number of my friends that are in the Senate, U.S. Senate, and off the record, talking about this issue. How do we bring the cultural issues back, and particularly Christian issues, back to the forefront? And when I finished that day, it was really clear to me that these are not the people who are going to do this for us. It has to be the people in the pews and in the community who call for something better. And when they call for something better, they will get it. The people in Washington simply reflect the confusion that we see presently in our own culture.
Yeah, it seems to me that we have an audience or a population, better said, that either doesn't care or is too busy in their lives doing other things and they're too busy, or they feel frustrated in the fact that they don't think it'll do any good to voice their objections to their representatives anyway. But I think that most of these representatives and senators feel immune because I don't think they think that they're governing anybody but themselves. I don't think they have any idea that there's anybody out there that cares very much because nobody really voices any concern. It's very frustrating.
Yes, there's. If I can go back to the people for just a second in this point concept, the folks really in this country are very interested in spiritual things. And let me start with that. I mean, Harry Potter has been a phenomena in this country. And what they like is they see the incredible power of what would be, we would consider spiritual. It's not necessarily the spirit that we're interested in, but there's a vacuum here. And the community tends to, what we have done in the church is we've tended to stay inside our four walls. We have not gotten into the community, not gotten involved with the community, have not said to the people who are in charge of the community, look, we're here to help. As a result, most of the programs, and you go into the church itself, I'm in a lot of churches across the country, and the first thing you do is pick up the bulletin and see, by looking at what programs they have, where's the money spent in the church? And I would say that across the country, and it's not always this case, there are differences, but I'd say that 95% of the money that is spent, time and focus of volunteers, is on church life. There's a singles program. There's an empty nesters program. There's a children's program. There's a youth program. There's a college program, and on and on and on. But there's very little that focuses on the outside community. You know, I think Robert Lewis said it best in his book, Church of the Irresistible Influence, where he started out by saying, we're really an impactful church in this community, and let's do a little research and see what people think. And he started with the streets around his church, and what he got back was not at all what he expected. What he found out was that the people that were in the neighborhood, when asked, what do you think the church does and how do you think they do, how well do you think they do, they said, we don't know what they do, but they're there every Sunday, and they take all the parking places. And that was the answer. And you think, oh, my gosh, you know, look at what the focus is. It's so inwardly focused that we get to this point of, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, there's two parts to the church. There's the church gathered, which is this concept of caring for its own. It's kind of the idea that we're the hospital for sinners, and the pastor, because he's, you know, Jesus, the God is the grand physician, and the pastor and the people in church do the triage and kind of sort people out and help them through some of these issues. But the church scattered, which is what happened after the beginning of Acts, when, you know, this is a natural thing, sort of come together, stay together, come together, stay together. Well, the Lord sovereignly scattered the church, and it wasn't until the church was scattered that the believer population began to grow. We are still inside our four walls, and we don't put enough energy into the community, and we are desperately in need of pastors to stand up and take this role, because they are the good shepherds. They are our example of Jesus to learn how to follow. And when they focus their time internally to the church, the rest of us learn how to be internally really good, but not very good externally.
Well, Ken, you know, let's go back to that pre- and post-revolutionary time that you talked about with, again, the green and the churches on every corner. And I want to just ask you a practical question, because obviously the culture was vastly different than it is today. We didn't have nearly the number of distractions that we do in our current culture with regard to television, the internet, taking the kids to soccer games and everything else. And the type of communities we had back in those days were quite different than we have now. It's difficult, I would think, to expect our churches and the people in our churches to react exactly the same. But how would you propose getting some of these things, maybe gathering back some of the things that used to take place where, and I think you've touched on it here, it has an awful lot to do with the leaders of the churches, the pastors. But how can we break through some of this tremendous distraction, this inward focusing that you're talking about? And a lot of it, of course, has to do with all of the problems that people bring into the church. And so they're so focused on themselves, they don't have any time to do anything outside. Any ideas for how to reinvigorate what we used to have?
Absolutely. And to lay this at the feet of the pastors and wipe our hands would be a terrible mistake. You know, pastors have a responsibility here, but the laity, the members of the congregation, the people that are involved, also have a responsibility. And for people that are listening today who understand, who get this message, it's really important to go and support the pastors in looking at a broader view of things. Right now, most people don't believe that pastors really have a broader interest, and as a result, and they think that the Bible really doesn't have this broad interest. It's simply related to relationships between us and God and between each other and God. And it's primarily because pastors don't typically talk about other things. We don't talk about politics in the church. We don't talk about, living, work, what people do at work in the church. And certainly pastors most of them have never had any experience in the business community, so they don't know how to talk about it, and they're embarrassed by that. And so their silence is deafening, and I would encourage people who are out there to go to their pastor and say, look, you may not have any experience here, but we have some really strong men and women of God who are working in the community, who understand the community and are willing to work in this area. There is a ministry, it's called His Church at Work, out of Atlanta, that is working, coming alongside churches and helping churches learn how to get involved in teaching their people to share their faith and to operate in their faith in their community lives. And when that happens, we begin to accomplish the very objective which God had in mind. In Isaiah chapter 42, verse 21, the sense of that verse is that God said, I have a plan, and my plan is to show people my law. Show them the law so that they might understand, so that others might understand that God is a righteous God. And what he's saying to us is that we need to be the fragrance of Christ, according to Corinthians 2:15, verse 15. We need to be the fragrance of Christ, it says, in every place. Well, that means at work. It means at play. It means in our environments. And most people really don't know how to apply that because we haven't been teaching it in church. When you take the SAT exam, the college entrance exam, they always have these little section on application. A is to B as C is to, and you pick, what is the D in that particular. That's application. That's the hardest thing to do. And yet we're not teaching application anymore. We're training people in terms of basic ideas of the Scripture, but we're not training them on how to apply it in their daily lives. So, we need to come alongside pastors. We need to encourage them to do this. We need them to take up this mantra. And their strength as individuals is they are still the moral authority of this nation. And they need to be out talking about issues that are on the soccer field, in the political environment, at school, in the work environment. I mean, we are presently in the work community in an enormous crisis, And this crisis we have is not about capitalism, which is where people are trying to put this. It's not about socialism. It's not about supply-side economics, and it's not about demand-side economics. It's about a failure in what I call spiritual capital. What do I mean? People are not... What's failed here is the banks took the debts, they wrapped them up, they went to organizations like such as Standard & Poor's and Moody's and so forth, who rate these mortgages, and they got them to rate them at a very high value, and then they sold them overseas at a increased valuation than what they were really worth, and they sold them to other banks on the basis of this. Well, this was a complete lack of trust, lack of responsibility, lack of accountability. All of these things are a part of spiritual capital, and as a result, the banks are under a great deal of pressure. They won't loan to each other because they don't trust each other anymore. That's the problem. It doesn't matter how much you want to supply these people. It doesn't matter how much you want to demand from them. Trust is fundamentally missing here, and that's the part that pastors and people of God need to be playing in reintroducing this into our economic lives.
I have challenged several pastors over the past few years with respect to just what you've said, that is becoming involved in the cultural and political scene to lead their flock, so to speak, with an understanding of what's going on and how it involves them. And every time I do that, well, not every time, but almost all the time, I get this response from the pastors. What you're asking me to do is to gamble my 501c3 exemption, which gives me tax-free status. That's number one. Number two, you're asking me to offend maybe half of the people in the church who aren't going to agree with me on issues like same-sex marriage, AIDS, homosexuality, abortion, adultery, and whatever, because every time I open my mouth about one of those, half the church gets mad at me. And if I open my mouth, somebody's going to report me to the Internal Revenue Service, and I'm going to lose a tax-free exemption. How do you recommend that a pastor is supposed to get over those issues when they seem to me to be pretty prevalent?
They are very prevalent, and these are issues that the pastors struggle with, particularly if you add in the issue that they have. You know, everybody wants a nice big church building, and they want places where people can meet, and so they end up with some sort of a, big expense to manage and maintain those places, and now the nut that they have to crack each week gets bigger, and we begin to focus on how we make these buildings successful, because otherwise we're going to lose them. You know, and it's just one more thing that gets added on to the pressure of the pastor, but the real question is, and I hate to be so blunt about this, but what is the role of the church? Is it to placate these issues, or is it to bring truth? The sad part is, if you wish, that we have to teach the whole Scripture and not just parts of it. You know, you're right, we see in the parking lot of what we would call an evangelical church stickers for politicians who absolutely are against the Word of God. And God is very angry about this, and people need to back up and say, wait a minute, if we want the blessing of God, and if we want to be in His will, and we want to operate in faith, we need to be teaching the whole counsel of God, and we need to be living that whole counsel. Yes, the church will be shaken up, but the church is losing its influence already. It says that If we look at it, though, on the basis of influence, coming back to this point about the fragrance of Christ, you know, it's fragrance to those who are saved, and it's death to those who are perishing. You know, well, those who are perishing see this as death. They don't like it. They're unhappy about these things. And they see that what they want to do is they want the church, but they want it to be conformed to their cultural norms. And the church is never supposed to conform to cultural norms. Church to conform to God. Now, saying that, it's easy for me to say, I'm not a pastor, but there are some ways to deal with this that pastors can begin to take on rather than start November, you know, October and say, look, we have a political problem here. I mean, people say, and I've heard this before, you know, look, who are you to talk about politics? You know, and it's because the way we approach this is completely wrong. We approach it during the heat of the election battle when people are focusing on these things, and they're focusing on them from a cultural norm rather than a scriptural norm.
Well, Ken, let me ask you, and first of all, let's remind our listeners, we're talking with Ken Eldred. He's the founder and CEO of the Living Stones Foundation, a business leader and author. Ken, I'm going to put you on the spot here for just a second toward the end of the broadcast and ask you, can you tell us about an experience, because you get out and about quite a bit, can you tell us about an experience, maybe one, maybe two, where you've had an opportunity to talk with a pastor who maybe wasn't doing some of these things that you've been talking about, and you were able to convince them to do that, and then what the results of that change might have been?
Oh, love to. There's in Southern California, Pastor Jim Garlow from Skyline Church was convicted in a session that we were involved in putting on about the responsibility to this nation under God. And he began, and he picked up on this Proposition 8 in California.
That's right.
Marriage proposition. And a number of us supported him in this, and he eventually had over 3,000 pastors on video conference calls talking about the importance of this issue, and starting in the summer, and it was a program of not only training, but prayer, participation, of learning, of teaching the fundamentals about the you know, what is our responsibility as a community to our nation, you know, as a church to our nation. What is our responsibility? As he began to teach these things, he laid a foundation, and these other pastors did too, and they ultimately got to a point where they said, and now what we need to do is, I'm not going to tell you how to vote, but I will tell you that you need to vote your faith, and we need you to be registered to vote. Well, these people had an enormous impact to the point where that proposition, as of 10 days before the election, was losing by 10 points. We won by 4. So, and if you think that didn't have something to do with these pastors, you'd be wrong, because there was another proposition on the ballot, which I thought would not have a problem. That was, should kids have the right, they were under 18, have the right to have an abortion without telling their parents? And I thought, you know, that's a slam dunk. They're going to say, absolutely not. You know, parents should have the right to be involved in their, I mean, you know, if you cut your finger at school, you know, the nurse calls you, you know, so I had no problem with it. Well, it lost 52-48. Just
amazing.
Opposite.
Amazing.
So you can't cut your finger without the nurse calling home, but you can go have an abortion and your parents will never know, because that's the law in California. These pastors stood up and made a difference, you know, and the homosexual community understood this. I mean, all of us that were involved in this activity have been threatened in one way or another by that community.
It's just amazing the backlash that has occurred. Well, Ken, we're getting close to the end here. If you could, in about a minute, tell us if we've got, I'm sure, a number of listeners out there who are just chomping at the bit saying, you know, I would really like to see my pastor take more leadership and be more outspoken in some of these issues that I have a tremendous amount of passion about, and I'm frustrated because my pastor won't do this. Give us 60 seconds of the best way to maybe to talk to your pastor, and also if you have some information available perhaps on your website that they can refer to.
Well, first of all, I think we need to help pastors remember what the issues are and get them to open up to us about how what their fears are and what their concerns are. We need to come around them and encourage them, because this is the role that they have to play, that God has called them to. Secondly, there is a lot of really good information, and I would send people to not my website, but wallbuilders.com, you know, which is a place that talks about the history of the Bible in our development. It has our role as Christians in the community. It's very, very well done. It would be a great place to get reference material for building a start. And I would encourage pastors to just speak on the importance of being involved as in the nation, and talking about, for instance, right now the crisis we're in. You know, people are in crisis, and many pastors aren't even talking about it. You know, there's wisdom in starting slowly. there's wisdom in building, you know, the base so that they're ready for you and with you when you move on to things that are more significant.
That's great. Our guest on Friday Encounter today, Ken Eldred, founder and CEO, Living Stones Foundation, a recent book that he's written, God is at Work, which we really haven't even talked about yet, that you might want to Google, God is at Work by Ken Eldred, E-L-D-R-E-D. Ken, thanks so much for your time today.
I mean, it was really great. Thank you, Jim. I appreciate the time. God bless you both.
For Bot Radio Network, this is Evan Fowler, along with Jim Jenkins. Thanks for listening.